And welcome everyone to a very special episode of Podcast Them Softly. This is Nick, and of course I'm joined by Frank. What's going on, buddy?
Not much. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I know we're both excited. It's going to be a really fun chat. Joining us tonight is the supremely talented actor Josh Pice. And Josh is one of those great performers who's quietly amassed an insane body of work throughout the years. And if you don't immediately recognize his name, you're more than likely going to recognize his face from something you've seen or 10 things that you've seen, as he punctuates everything he appears in with humor and intelligence and a great sense of craft. Some of his fabulous big screen credits include Schenectady, New York, Adventureland, Year of the Dog, A Beautiful Mind, Rounders, Phone Booth, Civil Action. As you can see, I can go on and on. Some Podcast Them Softly favorites: Leaves of Grass, Lynn Shelton's Touchy Feely. Both Frank and I are big fans of Lynn's work, of course. Touchy Feely is an awesome movie, so we're going to really love to chat with Josh about that one, definitely. And his work in TV is beyond reproach. He's made appearances on Ray Donovan, Law & Order, SVU, Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, The Good Wife, Sex and the City, Rescue Me, dozens more. And the future, of course, he's got a lot coming up. The remake of the classic Martin Brest comedy Going in Style, which I'm really looking forward to talking to him about. The Hank Williams musical biopic I Saw the Light, and a new film from Jason Bateman called The Family Fang, which we'll be curious to find out a bit about. So welcome to the show, Josh. It's an honor to have you here with us for a chat. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for that awesome introduction. I'm flattered.
I wrote that, by the way.
Oh, all right, never mind.
It just Frank, sounds good when Nick
Frank,
reads it.
That was just awesome. Nick kind of gave me the impression that it was something he wrote.
Yeah, he does that all the time.
So, yeah, Frank, Nick, if you just want to let Frank and I talk, that would be cool from here on.
Yeah, I'll just go to the bathroom for an hour. It'll be all right.
I'm just kidding. Nick wrote that.
Oh. All right.
I just like to make it sound like I do something, so I figured,
You hit the record button, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So it's in the podcast forever on the Internet Archives.
Nice.
So we're good there. Awesome. Yeah, man, thank you so very much for coming on. Nick and I are huge fans of yours, and I just want to jump right in because when we had Lynn on our podcast, I gushed to her forever about Touchy Feely. And that's my favorite film of hers, and I absolutely love it. And that's
so
one of those,
because not many people have seen it, so that's
right
to hear.
And it's on Netflix still, I believe, and maybe Amazon Prime. I'll double check that. But everybody should watch that film because it's not only is it funny, but it's just touching and poignant, and it hits all the right notes that film is supposed to hit. And like I was saying, it's filled with brilliant performances, and it's got a great ensemble, but I absolutely loved the dynamic between you and Allison Janney, and I thought the two of you were wonderful together.
Oh, thanks.
And how did that project come about for you?
I was in a movie, what was the name of it? That Nicole Holofcener movie. Please Give, yeah. I was in Please Give. It was at the Tribeca Film Festival, and we were there, I was there for a screening, and I walked out, and this blonde woman said, "Oh my God, you're Josh Pice. I'm such a fan of your work." And, and I was like, "Well, thank you." I was very, I was flattered, and we kind of strolled down the street together for a block or so. And then I said, what do you do? And she said, "Well, I'm Lynn Shelton, and I'm a movie director." I was like, a week, maybe 10 days prior to that, I saw Hump Day, which is her first film, not her first film, but the one that I think her first film that got a lot of attention. And I was like, who directed this? It was like, and then it was like a gushing in the other direction of just going like, your work is so amazing. I loved how, there's something very spontaneous and very, raw and very immediate in her work. And I was just, you know, and I was, and then we went to the, there was a party for the, for Please Give. And we just talked for, you know, about an hour and a half there. And we just said, you know, we want to work together. Let's do something. And then I suggested that we start Skyping, and just shooting the shit and seeing, you know, seeing what kind of ideas come up. And as a result of that, you know, I had some ideas, she had some ideas, and then she got busy with the film and it kind of dropped off. And then she had a gap in her schedule and she took, you know, the genesis of what we had been talking about and combined it with some other ideas that she had. And she, you know, over the phone, she said, you know, she called me and she said, you know, are you free in May? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, okay, listen to this. And then for about 45 minutes, she completely laid out the movie to me and I was writing it down. You know, then this happens and this happens. And, you know, it was just like, this is just too good to be true. And then, you know, an amazing cast came together, you know, Ellen Page, Allison Janney, Scoot McNairy, just everybody in the movie is just phenomenal. And then, you know, and then it started out with a script that was about 70 pages. Typically, a movie is around 100 pages or 110. And some of the scenes were descriptive, like they're having dinner and this is what happens. So there was definitely room for structure, you know, improvisation within the material. And then, you know, and then we just started, you know, we all met up first, most of the cast met in L.A. Before shooting, and Len just cooked a meal for us, and we just sat around, and we actually didn't even talk about the movie, but it just gave us a way to hang out, you know, with each other, and then we went to Seattle and just had a blast shooting this.
You mentioned that there was a lot of room for improv. Do you enjoy doing improv?
I love it. I veer in that direction just about with everything that I do. Like if I have an impulse, I do shows like Law and Order SVU, not much room for improvisation on a show like that, but the majority of other movies and TV, you know, projects that I get in, you know, if I have an impulse, I don't just improvise, but if it feels like it's really in alignment with the story, I'll just, you know, take that leap. And I would say definitely at least 9 times out of 10, you know, the director will be like, okay, you know, what do you want to do now? Just, you know, try something else, you know? And so, you know, and so that's just so exciting to me.
How did you prepare for that role? Because that character is so beautifully fragile.
Yeah.
And just so, you know, it's just so touching. The character's just so afraid of life.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just curious to see how you pulled that together.
More and more. I mean, when I started out, you know, in this art form, out of fear, I would structure the performance as much as I could going into, you know, the first day of rehearsal or the first day of shooting something. And having done this for, you know, many years, I now trust myself more, and so I really had an essence of the character, and I just trusted that it was going to come to me. And the first day of shooting, my character, who is, like you said, fragile, uptight, like somebody that wants to control his environment so that nothing spontaneous happens. I knew that was the essence of him. So this first day is a day where my character, hopefully not giving away too much, but is goes on an unexpected drug trip. And it's like the last guy in the world that would ever do this, but he, you know, he's taking something that's going to take him on a, you know, on a journey beyond what he's used to. And in this scene, it was one of the first things we shot. I'm walking down this long hallway to this nightclub. And again, this is like the last place you would ever find this guy. He's a dentist. He's happy just sitting in the back room looking at x-rays. Like that's an exciting day for him. And so, you know, Len said, you know, this is the most terrifying place to go. And so physically, I kind of lifted my energy from my feet up to my center and then crunched the energy from my upper body down to my center. And then I just let my feet be really tight, and it just generated this whole being. And that became like the physical dimension of this guy, of like kind of how contracted and compacted is he. And when, you know, as the story unfolds, does he open up, you know, maybe 15%? So that's kind of what I played with, is just an energetic, almost armoring, and just like trying to, it's somebody who protects himself way more than is necessary. And so I just kind of armored up and kind of crunched my energy, and then let that basically trigger my imagination.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, and like Frank said, the character in Touchy Feely is very delicate in the way that you portray it. It's varying shades of nuance while also paying attention to the inherent comedy involved in the material, which I think is a strength of yours throughout pretty much everything. I mean, throughout your career, and honestly, people, just like go to the IMDb and check out this man's credits. Like, they're obscene. And one of the things I just love so much is that you've done so many different things. You've been in comedies, you've been in dramas, you've done some thrillers, you've done almost seemingly a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Your style is so specific, and I wanted to ask, because there's definitely some of it at play in Touchy Feely, how do you deadpan the way that you do, and that's the thing that I love so much about watching you in any given performance. There's this sense of sly comic underpinning to everything, and you do it in such a dry way. Is that something that you cultivated over the years, or did you do it once and somebody said, all right, bring me that, what I saw in that movie. And then that kind of got to be one of your signatures.
I think it's more that I read a script, and I would say just about, I actually recently, we can talk about it, did a movie that has zero comedy in it from my side. But I just can't help but see what's funny about even the most serious situation. And it's, I think part of the humor comes from me as the actor understanding what the character doesn't see, and as a result of what the character doesn't see in himself, generates a certain kind of behavior. And to me, that, like, that just tickles me. And so it's not, you know, out of any sense of, you know, this is my signature, you know, whatever, but I just can't it's I can't help reading something and seeing it as funny. And so, you know, I just let myself know, you know, it's just somewhere in me that it's funny, but I don't do anything to try to punctuate the comedy with any kind of typical comedic timing, which I feel like is to a large extent outdated, and nobody wants to see it. Some people want to see it, but it's almost assuming the audience isn't smart by saying, look, I'm going to set this joke up to be funny. And I think it's more interesting to, you know, like in Touchy Feely, you know, there's so much, it's a combination of pain and comedy happening simultaneously. And just that tightrope is just, I just love, you know, that's where I love to walk. That was a tightrope analogy, by the way, which I promised you when you said, you know.
See, I was in the midst of Googling that. You totally spoiled it for me.
So the mixing of tones is something that you're a fan of.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say one of
yes, a mixing of tones. Yes.
Well, because I was going to say one of my favorite movies on your resume happens to be a movie that severely juggles tone all throughout, which is Leaves of Grass, and I revisited it last night, and it's a movie that I think is just so under the radar, and it's so bizarre and funny and weird, and I love the mix of violence and comedy. It reminds me of a Coen Brothers movie. Right. How did you get involved with Tim Blake Nelson on that project?
That was thanks to casting director A.V. Kaufman, who has put me in a lot of movies, and she, you know, she set up, you know, a meeting with me and Tim, and you know, we just, well, we didn't quite hit it off because he was like, this guy is good, but like, I think what I was doing and my take on it was like, is this real? it's like a real guy, but it was like, so, again, it was kind of underplayed, but it was also, playing a guy that is very, you know, he's an orthodontist, but at the same, I do a lot of dental characters, I guess.
Yeah.
But he was an orthodontist, and, you know, and his life gets completely out of control where he, you know, ends up just, you know, shooting a gun and, you know, freaking out. And so I think it took, I had several meetings with Tim, before, you know, he pulled the trigger, so to speak. And then we just, like, then it was just awesome. And I knew Edward Norton from Rounders. And we just instantly kind of clicked into something. And it was, you know, Tim, at a certain point, he was just like, just do, let's shoot another one. Just do whatever you want to do, you know. And we just kept riffing and, you know, created this great tone, you know, of these, you know, Edward plays two different, you know, he plays twins, as you guys know, and it was just an awesome experience to play a guy, you know, an absolutely normal guy who gets pushed to the edge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a movie that I wish more people were familiar with, and it's just, it's that every year there's a handful of small films, and I'm glad that you know, when he was alive and writing movie reviews, I'm glad that Roger Ebert stepped up to the plate with like a lot of acclaim for that film. I remember his review was something else for that one. Yeah. And he hit it so right. It's just, you could get 5 or 10 thrillers a year, 20 thrillers a year that are all like mundane and the same, and you've seen it before. And then here's one with personality and with humor and smarts, and it's kind of not afraid to try things differently. And that's what I'm always looking for. Mm. But yeah, I'm really glad that you were involved in that project for sure, because it's a really fun movie. Tim Blake Nelson has made sort of like one movie after another that's, you know, sort of under the radar, doesn't quite get the acclaim it deserves. It does in certain quarters, but he's an interesting voice for sure as a filmmaker.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing Nick and I have been very fortunate with our podcast is we get to talk to all sorts of people, but in particular, we also get to talk to people that were responsible in part for films that are seminal to our childhood. And I need to ask
Where's this going?
I was gonna make a weird joke, okay. But I just don't know.
No, keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, keep going. Anyway. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I feel like we try to be serious and then it gets like all Beavis and Butthead, you know, we're just like Okay.
Well, yeah,
back to my filmography.
Yeah. Back to your filmography. And can you do a Laurence Olivier voice when you talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Because I feel like that would make it so much better. But Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I probably watched that on VHS 50 times. And I know Nick saw it in the theaters on opening night. What was that movie like to make?
Well, first of all, you know, the costume was 70 pounds, and we couldn't breathe, and we couldn't see.
But so much better than CGI, let me tell you. Go ahead. Yeah. I can't wait to hear about this.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've heard stories about actors getting body casted, but you know, they flew us to London, and you know, one at a time we would get, you know, because they had to body cast us in order to make, you know, the turtle suits fit our bodies exactly. And so it's like a slow process of sealing you up with plaster until your entire body is sealed in plaster and you have two straws in your nose, and, you know, and when plaster's on, it starts to heat up, and they left us in there, longer than usual because they just wanted to see what our freak out back. So that was kind of like the beginning, you know, of dealing with, you know, that kind of, a costume. And so then we went to, North Carolina and we rehearsed the movie. We did 4 months of martial arts training prior to shooting. Then we went to North Carolina and we rehearsed the movie like a play. We would go through the whole thing and each of us had somebody that in our shell was a computer that controlled our face. And it was a very important relationship with the guy that controlled your face. And so we would rehearse and somebody would watch my facial expressions and then attempt, you know, to create the equivalent of my facial expressions on the turtle's face. And so part of the performance, part of the process was, and I would work with him, like we would say, like in this scene, you know, like we want to communicate this and how can we do that with the face, you know, and then I grew up in the East Village in New York City, when it was called Alphabet City when I was a kid, and it was a very dangerous neighborhood. And there were a lot of people that walked around, especially like shorter people, would walk around like moving in a way that made their bodies look big, so that they kind of held a lot of space and they would kind of move their hands in the air, like just as they were walking, to be like, this is my, you know, this is my space, don't mess with me. And so I just felt like that essence was really right for Raphael. And so, you know, that physicality combined with, you know, this other guy, you know, operating the face, you know, was part of the creative process. And the fact, you know, we would lose 5 pounds from morning till lunch break because of the heat and the, you know, and wearing 70 pounds and just sweating. And all of that in physical intensity when the camera was rolling was awesome, because it helped me to bring forward, you know, Raphael's angst and his frustration and his inability to be at peace with himself. So when we were shooting, it was, you know, when the camera was rolling, was awesome. But when the camera was not rolling, because, you know, that technology at the time was at the cutting edge, and things just kept breaking down. Like, it would be like, okay, you know, Leonardo's face is frozen, you know, something like that. And then it'd be like 40 minutes, you know, to take his shell off, you know, see what went wrong. And meanwhile, you know, we had to be sitting there, and they didn't want to, once we would, the head would go on, they would glue it. So you were sealed in. It wasn't like now, when there's anything like that, you just see like all the suits are air conditioned and, you know, and everything is easy to take on and off. It was not like that at all. And so waiting between takes it was just like, it was insane. It was like it felt like your blood was boiling from the heat and, you know, and you could barely breathe. And you could barely see, you know. So that was the hard part. And there were times when one of us would be like, you know, we couldn't take it anymore, and it would just be, you just hear like, and it'd be like muffled, it'd be like, take the hat off, take the hat off. You know? And I remember one of my freakouts, like my face. Because they boot down the computers, and like Raphael's face was kind of like a smile in a smile position, and it was just, you know, they booted it down and it was in that position, and I was like, I couldn't, I was like, I had to get some fresh air, and I was like moving my arms, and I was going like, take the head off, you know. But to anybody watching, it's like this smiling Ninja Turtle waving his hands, you know, and people are just like pointing and laughing, you know, like, you know, Josh is so funny. And like, meanwhile, I'm, you know, freaking out. But, you know, it was an amazing, amazing experience.
Yeah, and I'm just looking to make sure I'm right, and I thought maybe that was a pretty early big screen credit for you. You had done some TV, and yeah, you were in a movie I want to ask you about in a second, Jackknife. But the Ninja Turtle thing for me, as Frank said, I was 10. I saw that movie on the big screen like opening night. It was just huge. I mean, there was nothing cooler and nothing better. Yeah. I have to say, I don't care what special effects they can throw at us these days. Seeing the turtles done like that, yeah, originally, well, what you were describing sort of sounds like the genesis for like what they're doing now for motion capture. Like, mm-hmm, you know, somebody mimicking the movements of somebody else and trying to duplicate it in another form or fashion. But that first Ninja Turtles movie was something else. I still think it holds up real well even to this day. It's just an enjoyable movie, and it really captured the spirit of that graphic novel and the whole thing. But what was it like to be on a production of that size, that relative size, and something that was so big of, you know, in culture and pop culture relatively early on in your career, with movies?
Well, you know, it's really like a story, you know, comes to mind. Me and Leif Tilden, who is, you know, still a good friend, who played Donatello. We were, I can't remember, we might have been in the Hamptons. I don't know where we were, but we were on some beach. And after the movie had come out, and there was a kid running around, and he had like a Ninja Turtle towel, and he was like running, you know, all over the beach, and he kind of stopped somewhere near us, and we said, hey, you know, I played Raphael, and he was Donatello in the movie, and like the kid just froze and like stared at us, and like his face crumbled, and then he just and he just like ran like crying hysterically, you know, to his mother, you know, and we kind of felt like we were like these weird pedophiles, you know, but we were just like, you know, trying to like tell the kid like, you know, some history. So it was weird because it's like the movie was, you know, enormous, but I was anonymous. Like I was the, you know, right. In a sense, the lead, you know, or one of the leads in this, you know, it's the movie that put New Line on the map. Like one of the, you know, it was one of the biggest movies last year. And it broke tons of box office records. The production wanted to keep the turtles, anonymous. They didn't, because they felt like it would shatter something. And
the illusion,
you know,
for kids, probably. Yeah,
they made, you know, I did like Kathy and Regis, and I was in People magazine, but, you know, it was a very odd thing because, it was, you know, it was a huge movie. I was a huge part of it, and nobody knew it was me. It's just a very very unusual kind of experience.
May I ask, how come you weren't in the sequels?
I wasn't in the sequels because by the time they were doing the sequel, I kind of knew after starting the first one, there was some like talk that there would be sequels, and I kind of knew that I didn't want to keep doing that kind of, you know, in a sense, costume work. I don't know if costume is quite the right word, but I knew that I did, you know, that wasn't what I wanted to do. And I knew, you know, as I started to, you know, meet people at Jim Henson's Creature Shop, I saw, you know, there are a lot of actors, particularly at that time, that was their career, and they were very happy, you know, playing monsters or playing, you know, different kinds of creatures. And I just knew that wasn't the trajectory I wanted to go on. I started recurring on Law and Order, when the second movie came. And so, you know, I opted to not do it.
I want to ask, because it's a film that I haven't seen in a while.
Second thoughts, but carry on. Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
You talk, I talk. Okay.
It's a movie that I haven't seen in a long time, but it's another one of those underrated movies that I, you know, certainly in the sense that De Niro's in it. Your first, according to the IMDb Pro here, your first big screen credit was in a film called Jackknife, which stars De Niro as a post-traumatic stress, you know, suffering Vietnam vet trying to adjust to life after the war. Was that your first big screen movie?
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yep.
And so your work on TV led to that, or how did that movie come about?
Just an audition. It was just going in and auditioning and getting the part. And, and it was like my first movie, and it was with Robert De Niro. And I was like, who, you know, just, starting out and seeing, you know, Taxi Driver and Raging Bull, and it's like you see those movies. You know, for me, I was like, I want to be, you know, that's what I want to do. And then, you know, and then to work with him, you know, I just had some couple small scenes. I remember just meeting him and just shaking his hand, and it was like I just imagined this massive, you know, Robert De Niro grip, and it was like just this kind of really gentle, barely gripping handshake. That was kind of my first impression. And you know, it was just an amazing experience just to be, you know, just to be with Robert De Niro. And I remember, you know, in between takes, I said, so, you know, because he had done all these other movies where, you know, it was all about his transformation. And I said, so, you know, what kind of, you know, what did you do for this? You know, how did you prepare for this? And he was like, I said, did you do anything in particular? And he was like, no.
No. You can picture him saying it too.
That story didn't really go. I thought, you know, you thought it was going to go somewhere, but
I can edit in a laugh track.
That would be great. Thanks.
Yeah, I will certainly do that. I'll edit in a laugh track for that.
You want to record that right now so you can cut it back?
I can edit it in our post production when I go into the studio
now.
After
I'd like to
okay,
what you guys would do. So, let's just do one more time. You can use this, okay?
Okay.
And then Robert De Niro said no.
LOL.
Oh God, that sucks. Dude, that's better.
Oh, this is priceless. Jeez.
Okay.
All right, I think I'm good with the giggles now.
Okay.
As long as you stop, I can
okay.
stop.
Okay.
All right.
This is serious, man.
This is. Moving on to the thing that most recently that I loved you and that I've seen had been, because I was a little late to the party on the show, was Ray Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely loved your character in that.
I did too.
How did the genesis of Stu Feldman come about?
You mean me creating the character?
Both. Like you getting involved in the project and then you creating Stu, who's smarmy yet affable.
Well, I was actually it was New Year's Eve before the first season of Ray Donovan, and I was at some people came over to my house. I live in New York primarily in the city, and Edward Norton was one of the people that came over, and he was here, and then we all went over to Edward's house, name drop, boom, and
I got it. I was a little late. So you know Edward Norton personally.
And Ann Bitterman was over there, and so I met her, and she was the creator of the show. And unbeknownst to either of us, there was like a meeting set up where I was going to meet her, you know, for that show, like in 4 or 5 days after that. And so, you know, we met, and it was like, you know, and the script was amazing. And so we kind of hit it off on New Year's Eve. And, and then, you know, I basically, created like a guy that has, my notion was, you know, is that it's a guy that has everything. He has all the toys. He has all the success. He gets as much pussy as he wants. He's got like, he owns, you know, California. And, if you want to edit out pussy,
No, we're good. We swear all the time.
Yeah. PG-17, it's fine.
Okay. Vagina, maybe. I don't know. What? Put in whatever. Anyway. This will probably be the part that'll, like, you know, this will be the teaser that you'll use.
We've never done a teaser. We should do a teaser.
Okay. I'm not going to say that. Oh, my food just arrived. I got to go, guys. Can you hear my dog barking? Okay, wait a minute. All right. I'm going to be serious. So a guy that has it all, Stu Feldman, but, like, has no sense of self-esteem, like, is, like, hollow on the inside, and so can only operate by attempting to manipulate people, you know, with his power. And, you know, that was my, you know, my take on the guy. It's like a guy that has everything, but nothing satisfies him. And also talking with Anne, she was telling me about a, you know, a producer that she knows that, and she just said he's just can't get comfortable in his own skin. And so, you know, that was something kind of physically, just that notion that he can't be comfortable and that he wants to dominate. Like that's, you know, that was the genesis of, you know, of the character.
So you're playing yourself?
Yeah. That was the best timing of the whole podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I was holding it the whole time.
Yeah, who says comic timing isn't important? there's definitely, I mean, there's so much, and we want to be mindful of the time here, but, and there's so many things we could ask you, but I have to ask about teeth.
Yeah.
Because teeth is arguably one of the more fucked up movies that I've seen, and I've seen a lot of fucked up movies for sure.
Right. I know.
And that, and the reason why that movie is so particularly disturbing is because, yeah, it's a horror movie, but it's really funny in a way that it shouldn't be, like, a lot of the times. What was your response to teeth and reading the script, or how did you get involved with the Vagina Dentata movie?
Well, do you want to just tell the audience that doesn't know the movie a little bit about what it's about?
That's true, I guess. Teeth is a charming black comedy horror obscurity that involves Jess Wexler, correct?
Yes.
She's terrific in the movie.
She's amazing.
She plays a girl who has...
How shall I put it?
Yeah, I mean, she essentially has teeth in her nether regions. And
would that be pussy?
Yeah, in her pussy. And it's kind of interesting. This year there was this movie called It Follows.
Yeah.
And It Follows is this kind of like heightened, dreamy, like sort of anti-STD, like kids shouldn't be having sex without, you know, protection, like, you know, like fables.
Right.
And teeth sort of like fits kind of like in that weird subgenre of horror movies that have this like odd sexual angle to them. So teeth, how did you get involved? Why did you get involved?
I read the script, and you know, I play the gynecologist of the, you know, of Jess Wexler's character, who has teeth in her nether regions. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
In her pussy.
It's a tough movie to sort of beat around the bush about.
Got a good bite to it. So How many minutes of giggling is in this?
I don't know. I'm leaving it all in, though. This is gold. This is going to get a syndicated somewhere.
Okay. Well, I read the script, and I was like, this is the most fucked up script ever. And then this character is just, you know, of this gynecologist who basically, you know, is inappropriate in the exam and gets, as a result of the teeth, you know, gets his fingers bitten off. and
by a beaver?
Settle down now. So when I met with you know, Mitchell Lichtenstein, who's Roy Lichtenstein's son, who is the director of the movie, and like the first thing I said to him is like, this is fucked up. but it's just so, it's so well written, and it's a great story, and it's a great fable. And so, you know, my notion in terms of playing that was, you know, that in a sense, you know, from that guy's point of view, from that character's point of view, it's like he's role playing. Like he looks at his, you know, and the character gets, you know, his revenge. And there should be revenge on this character, you know, but he just goes into his gynecological exams, you know, with the notion that he's role playing, you know, some kind of living out some kind of fantasy. And so that kind of gave me just playing with that notion gave me the ability to, you know, to do that, to play that character, you know, who's kind of hysterical, you know, funny, but also horrible, you know, all at once. And now you could say kind of like yourself, but you can edit that.
I already burned that.
Got
one.
Got it. Okay. You can re-edit that in and use it here,
okay,
there if it's better. That's up to you. And you know, it's like the first day of shooting, you know, I meet Jess and, you know, and then like, you know, 15 minutes later, I'm giving her a gynecological exam, you know, it's just, but we just, you know, we just jumped in and totally went, I mean, it's the most insane scene. I mean, that scene is just unbelievable, you know, in the gynecological.
Oh yeah. It's a crazy movie. Everyone should check it out. It's a good Halloween movie. It's a crazy movie.
And it's beautifully shot. I mean, it's just, it's great filmmaking. It's a great movie. It's really weird and really entertaining and yeah. Nothing else on that sentence. Okay, now you ask me something.
Okay. What was it like to work with...
Next question.
To work with... Fine, I won't ask about Bill Cosby. Jeez.
It was a real sleeper, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Now if we're correct, that's your one of your first credits, your absolute first credits, correct?
Yeah.
Working on the Cosby Show?
Yeah. Wow, I'm actually like almost sweating from giggling this much. Yeah, I played a Princeton graduate who became a plumber.
I don't seem to recall that particular episode for some reason, but My memory has been clouded over the last few months of other reminiscence.
I learned a lot about acting from that, and just TV acting from watching him. You can't say anything serious about Bill Cosby anymore. I tried.
You tried. Well, let's bounce from Bill Cosby to a small part, but in a movie that honestly is one of the great pieces of art of the last 20 years, and that is Schenectady, New York. And I know that it's a small part, but I would have to imagine that you got a call. I'm assuming that you got a call or something. Somebody said, get Josh Pice or something. And, you know, you get a chance to be involved in a Charlie Kaufman endeavor.
It was just, a total, dream, just to work with those guys, like Charlie Kaufman, he's a genius. And,
I agree.
His films are, just some of my absolute favorite films. And so I was just, absolutely honored and also to work, with Phil was just, again, a dream come true. And so we just, we were shooting in this weird abandoned hospital, and they brought this equipment in, and it was just really taking the time. There's these weird pauses in that scene, it's like those weird pauses that can happen, I'm basically giving him I'm looking into his brain through his eyes and assessing what's going on with him. And
it's such a funny scene.
It's so weird and funny, and just their doctors, that holds like a sense of power because they have, a certain level of knowledge, and they just, there's just these pauses where where I would just look at him, and really just look, and it was made him so uncomfortable, and I just love that scene. I just love it, and it was such an honor to to work with him. Yeah, it was a great project.
The last thing I wanted to bring up before we let you go, because I'm sure you're busy.
I'm really busy.
And my food came. Right.
Could you hear my dog barking?
We could, yeah.
Cool.
So that was kind of like my indication that we needed to wrap stuff up here. But
well, it's been a pleasure.
Yes. Okay. I was going to let you plug your acting class, but I guess you got to go eat your chop suey that came. So this is where I need to inject a laugh track, because that just died.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, in all seriousness, though, you teach an acting class.
I do. I teach something called Committed Impulse. And basically, my actor training, as good as it was very intellectual and very heady and very psychological. And I was just wanting to, early on, in kind of training to be an actor, I just wanted to, I was only interested in how could I be spontaneous. And I went on quite a journey, working with all kinds of international directors and Japanese theater companies and very physically based actor training. And as a result of kind of this journey to it kind of almost make it a technique, if you will, although it's not a technique is not the right word, but an approach to acting where I could be spontaneous, like that was my goal. And so after working with all these people, I was involved with a theater company called Circle Rep, and they said, why don't I why don't I direct and use everything that I'd been learning with these actors? And so went on like a, you know, for, it was a little over a year. I kind of trained them in what I was learning, you know, just to create performance that was, instead of recreating something, it, so that the audience can experience something actually happening in front of them, as opposed to seeing an actor bring something that's already dead because they've locked it and it's like, it feels more secure. And so from that, people just, you know, NYU asked me to teach. And so I taught at NYU for several years on and off. And now I continue to teach, you know, I teach a couple weekend workshops, and then every spring, if my shooting schedule allows, I'll teach like 1 7-week course. And it's a combination of actors, and maybe there's 30% entrepreneurs take the class, because it's all about how to create, you know, in the present moment, and to really, you know, to be there in the act of creation, as opposed to, you know, often our mind wants us to preset what we're going to do out of a sense of wanting safety, but nobody wants to see that. So that's kind of what I teach.
And
I'm waiting for a joke after somebody gets done saying something. I was just waiting for it.
Right.
But I guess we were just let down.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't happen, and that's part of life, okay, dude?
Yeah, I know. It's rough, man. Yeah.
Not everything's, you know, funny.
And how often does Candid Impulse, how often do you do the seminars, like the, you know, the classes?
I do one in New York. I try to do one in New York in the fall and one in LA in the fall. And then I'll do in January, I try to do 1 weekend course in LA, and then back in New York in, usually it's around end of April is when I do like a 7-week course. So, you know, it's got, there's a website called Committed Impulse and
.com.
Yeah.
And coming up, before we let you go, coming up, you've got some really cool stuff on the horizon.
My food's cold, so whatever.
Your food's cold now, so fuck it, whatever. You're in the remake of Going in Style, which was one of these movies. I'm a big fan of Martin Brest. I'm like still bummed that like he was like run out of Hollywood, but whatever. That's another podcast. Going in Style was one of those movies. Was like one of those Holy Grail movies that like I had not seen, always wanted to see out of print on DVD, and it was on Turner Classic Movies and about 5 or 6 months ago, and I had a chance to watch, and it's such a funny movie. There's a hell of a cast in that, in the remake. What can you tell us about?
Yeah, Michael Caine, Alan Arkin, and Morgan Freeman. You might have heard of them.
And, yes.
I mean, I got to work with those guys. It was just, you know, just amazing. And
who don't know, this is about three retired guys who figure, what the hell, we got nothing to lose and we have no money in the savings or no retirement. We're going to rob a bank.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, I mean, those guys are, I mean, they're legends. And, you know, just to, it's like my mind was blown. Like I'm shooting a scene with Michael Caine and we rehearse it, and then, you know, we're kind of like, you know, waiting while the camera and the lights and everything gets set up. And, you know, and he's like, I can't do his accent. I wish I could. But, you know, he's like, you know, would you mind if we ran this a couple times? You know, and I'm just like sitting there with Michael Caine, like running lines for a scene, you know, over and over again. It was just like amazing. And, you know, and those guys are just like, they're just actors, you know. It's like there was nothing added. There was no like nonsense. It was just like, you know, they, you know, with each take, like they were just, they just totally went for it, you know? And then sometimes between takes, they'd be like sitting down, like absolutely exhausted. And then, but as soon as it was their, time to be up, like they just turned it on, and it was just so inspiring to see them have fun. Like that's just so key to, it's so key to the art form. And, cause I think, if the people creating something are not having fun, it can't generate entertainment for people watching. And I think also seeing people having, having fun and collaborating, it's very life affirming, because we're constantly, seeing, elements of our society where nobody does get along and there is no cooperation or balance or sense of play and really listening to each other. And that was the deep section of the podcast just there.
What can you tell us about the work you just did with Jason Bateman on his new movie?
Well, I'm just working with Nicole Kidman.
Or is that something that's coming up that hasn't been shot?
No, that's been shot.
Oh.
Yeah, it just was at Toronto and got great reviews. So I'm not sure exactly when it's coming out. I play this kind of independent film director, and she's in the movie that I'm in, and I'm convincing her to, the importance of her being topless in this scene in the movie. And really fun, just great, like very, again, it's like just able to play that tightrope of like, really serious, but absolutely insane and outrageous at the same time.
So a movie within a movie conceit going on in the,
yes.
In the,
yeah, cool. Within my, with my storyline.
Cool.
And, yeah, it was super cool. And, Christopher Walken is in the movie and,
Wow.
Well, we love Christopher Walken. Frank and I are big fans, so.
Yeah, well, that felt like the whole podcast took a turn there. Did you guys feel that?
I don't know if it was the wind coming in from my window or if it was just the ice-cold chill from the podcast dying. I don't know which one.
Right.
It was.
Right.
But, yeah, I know your food's getting cold, but
no, it's already.
Josh,
it's already cold.
Thank you.
Let's do another half hour because the food's already.
Okay. That's fine.
So let me just—I don't know—tell you a little bit about me. Yeah. Okay. No, I think we're done.
Okay. Good. dude, seriously, thank you so much for coming on. This was just an amazing chat. It was so much better than fun. I could have possibly imagined it being. Seriously, thank you. Thank you very much.
What were you imagining it?
I thought I was just going to sit here and watch the Republican debate while Nick was going to ask you questions about Bill Cosby and teeth and Edward Norton, who you're BFF with.
Right.
And all that stuff.
New Year's Eve. Oh, no, I told you that. Okay, never mind. All right, you guys are awesome. This was so much fun.
Yeah, seriously, man. If you ever have an upcoming project that you want to hype, you are more than welcome back on anytime.
So much.
Anytime you want.
All right.
Yeah, Josh, goes without saying, thank you very, very, very much, and we'll look forward to keeping in touch for sure.
Absolutely. All right, rock on, you guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man. Okay. Take care.